You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Welcome to another episode of, or a special episode of This Week Explained. This is something we titled Beyond This Week because it kind of gets into, it's not just a geopolitical conversation. There's a conversation about various things that I like to talk about. So we just did one with Alex Van Houten from Everyday Spy talking about help. But I was also given the opportunity to screen a new documentary that has just been released called Medusa. And I wanted to talk to the producer and director of this documentary because it's very impactful to me. And as we come up on the four-year anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion or special military operation, as President Putin would call it, I thought it was a good time to do this interview for that reason, and because the documentary is being released at this time as well. The reason this looks a little bit different than what we normally do here, typically you'll get a great quote from the episode. And then we go into sort of an introduction of what we're going to talk about. But this episode is quite different because there was a lot of emotional conversations that are going on. And I wanted to get ahead of it for people who, you know, may have traumatic experiences and they are unable to or unwilling to listen to a heavy conversation. If that is you, please stop the podcast now. I'm not asking for millions of people to listen to a podcast if they're not ready for it. So stop now. And if you ever do become ready, come back to it because it's a great conversation, not only about the war in Ukraine. So Medusa follows an actor turned sniper for the Ukrainian military, but it is also a conversation about human tragedy. There are other stories that are weaved into this this documentary of other tragedies, a man who loses his wife, a family who loses their father, and then an entire community that loses their, or is on the brink of losing their very existence. And all of these tied together to show human tragedy. But I also think it shows hope from that tragedy. A child is born out of it. Life is brought into this world. So again, if you're still listening and you're debating whether you should listen to this whole podcast or not, I would say take some time. Reflect on where your head is. I am doing post-production right now, and I am having a difficult time with it. We deal with conversations of war, gruesome violence, and human tragedy. And so if you're not ready for that or prepared for that, again, stop this episode. Come back to it when you are ready. But if you do want to hear a great conversation, an emotional conversation, and get into understanding the human psyche and our souls and, you know, who we are as a society, this is the podcast for you. And so without any further ado, no other introduction, welcome to the podcast.
That was a powerful moment. And then on the other side of that, too, Katya says about herself and their daughter together, we're your country. No.
Yeah.
So that's the unspoken part of that. And I wonder if you feel like the war has followed you even to the present day.
Yeah, it absolutely. Great question. As the journalist and the documentarian, yes, it has. It's what I continue to do to this day. I cannot get out of it. You know, my mind won't let me get away from it. My body, my soul, that is every day. And when I try to escape it, I want to go back. You know, as terrible as that might sound to most people, that was a day-to-day emotion for me. So it was first deployment to Iraq, 2004. Did not want to go, did not want to do it. Did a year, and then 15 years of just steady going back. And every time I got back home, I wanted to go back out. I think there's multiple reasons for that. One, you feel you've left your brothers and sisters behind, and you want every single one of them who was lost, you feel like you played a part in that by not being there. But also those experiences, like you're chasing the high again of those experiences. And you just cannot do that in suburban Washington, D.C.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also a clarity to life, I would say, that you don't find back in the civilian world. There's a way that the essential is just elevated and present with you. And I understand that sentiment a lot, having been in you know, reporting in some of those places. And you also bring up you said in your soul, which I thought was, you know, really an evocative image, because I imagine that Pavlo's experience is resonated with you, because there's this spiritual component to it as well. The way they described it was that everything that didn't matter was just burned away. All of the, they see it, they frame it as a spiritual journey that they needed to have on some level in order to progress as beings.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what he was talking about with the pine tree on fire, right? And the flames are there, and he's in the moment, and the flames are moving away. And like, I think he saw himself in that, in something, you know, the embers burning away something from him. He's no longer the same person, and he'll probably admit that as well. For reasons not in his control. And so I mean, we're getting really heavy to start the podcast. So I will introduce you in, just in case. I mean, I was going to say, like, it's an hour and a half documentary, and we could have a 22 hour podcast of just me, like, dumping on you because you have experienced some of this and seen some of the same things that I have seen. Maybe even in a more dramatic sense, having been in Ukraine, in a peer-to-peer conflict where global war on terrorism, we would call it, you know, we had, like, we were the superior force there. And although we were overrun at some times, it's not this peer sort of peer-to-peer adversary that Pavlo was dealing with. And so the audience may be wondering who we're talking about. But first, I want to introduce who I'm talking to, Roch Marin. He is the documentarian for the documentary Medusa, which is a film about war, but I think it is more of a film about humans and the human element, because you kind of weave these other stories that on the surface seem like they're completely different stories. But when they weave all together, you understand that this is human tragedy. And in these human tragedies, there are beautiful moments that happen. You have the wife of a Japanese man who has perished, who recounts, right, wanting to know if she has reincarnated and been, you know, if she's someone else, and if she even remembers him, if she is someone else. And you have a family whose father passed away, who sees the dad in their child that was born. And then you have in the Amazon, the religious, the soulful experience of like life and what it really means. And then you have Pavlov, who is he is the story, right? He is the sniper actor, an actor who portrayed a sniper, becomes a sniper in real life because he wants to do something for his country, for his people, after they were ruthlessly invaded by a dictator, by an authoritarian. And he wanted to do something there. We're going to unpack all of that. And I usually don't like to talk this much at the beginning. So I apologize to everyone for that, but I just wanted to kind of explain how much the documentary impacted me as I watched it. And so then I just introduce you, Rock. So you can take it from there. You can please introduce yourself and what you've done, because you're more than a documentarian. And then we'll get into the film, and then we'll get into some more more human stories, I think.
Thank you for that. There's so many things to address about what you said. I'm also, by the way, very comfortable being on the other side of things, being the interviewer. I feel like we could turn this around. I'd love to hear about your stories in the military and your experiences. But one of the things that brings up for me is the way in which a lot of the war documentaries that you might see are on this macro scale. It's about clashing armies. It's about these larger political ideas. And I feel that you have a unique understanding of how war happens on the level of the individual. Like, we call it war, but it's really an experience being had one by one by one by one person on this, you know, this grand scale. And so for me, that granular story and the inner world and how that reflected the outer reality was of primary interest.
Yeah, and you nailed it with that. And like, just what you said was one of the things that was on the top of my mind, that this is not a war documentary. This is a human documentary. Because just like you said, most war documentaries take a macro look at it. There is a political element to the documentary. There is sort of a military element. And you didn't get that in Medusa. You got the human, like, what has this war done to not just a people on a macro level, but to a person on an individual level? Someone who saw themselves as an artist, who still is an artist. I love how he talks about being a sniper in a way that you would never hear me, for sure, describe a sniper. That you're there to take a picture. And you are taking the picture in the final moments of an event. And from an artistic level, that is what a sniper is. You are taking a picture. Just as you would snap a photo, you would squeeze and not pull a trigger to do the same effect, which is to do something, right? You're taking an element of a moment and you're snapping it in time. And that's how he saw himself, as more of a photographer than a sniper.
Yeah, he is just inevitably in everything that he does an artist, even when you bring it. And he, I think there's part of him that would really hold back from that in the sense of what he's doing now as a sniper. He would say, well, this is my job. This is my, you know, he would say, I have a job to do. I think that's a way of distancing himself. But if you're an artist, in one sense, you're an artist in every sense, I believe. So he couldn't help even bringing that into the experience. And I think it makes it more painful to, because being an artist as well has this sense of vulnerability, this sense of connection to everything. And that struggle is at the heart of a lot of the film. You brought up this reincarnation theme that recurs. And also at the heart of the film is the immortal jellyfish, which is like the animal version of this reincarnation idea, this jellyfish that reverts back to its infantile form to relive its life. And it can do this infinitely under the right circumstances. This is an acknowledgement of this extensive connectivity between living things that Pavlo just innately experiences. And so, you know, we're left with a lot of questions in this.
Yeah, I think we had, you're telling me lots of questions, you know, throughout the documentary and as it concludes. And I think top of mind is, how did this all come together? You know, typically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm not a documentarian, I haven't done film or anything, but typically there is one, you have one idea in mind as you start to film things, and then something changes and it kind of creates the documentary for you. Did that happen in this one? Were you setting out for something different, and then it just, whether it was through Pavlo or one of the other stories, where it just, something clicked and you said, no, this is the real story?
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I didn't intend to make this film. I didn't have this in mind. I really didn't want to make it even on another level. I felt like, okay, my days as a war correspondent are behind me. And because I'd been a print and photojournalist in Ukraine in 2014 and 2015, when the conflict began, I have good friends over there. I have colleagues, people I care about. And when the full-scale invasion happened, it was personal. I'm talking with people who I know, who I've, you know, been close to, telling me there's tanks in the street, that, you know, the building's been hit. And so I felt a sense of obligation, necessity to be there. It felt like the most important thing happening. Like I couldn't not go. But my idea was, well, I'm going to go, and that's the important thing. And then I'll see. And that's how I've always gone about things, is I feel a pull in a certain direction. I follow it. And from that place, I see something else, and I see something else, and I see something else. But to get to the essential moment that you're speaking to, when I met Pavlo, and we had that first interview, I knew that I could not escape making this film, that it was a necessity. And that's the kind of certainty that you have to do something like this. You have to be 100% certain, because you can't squirm out of it. It takes so much energy, so much concentration, years of your life that you just dedicate. And I can say, I just signed away those years of my life, you know, in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. You that comes away through the documentary. You see the passion in it through some of the weaving that's done with not just Pavlo, but like other Ukrainians. You know, there's this scene where this Ukrainian woman is taking you, or taking the filmmakers through, or the audience really, through the town, you know, that she lives in, and her house is gone, right? And she kind of breaks down in a moment walking in, and it's you know, she says the window is gone, and that really makes her break down, that she sees like everything, all these tangible things are really gone because someone decided to do this. It was not, you know, it was not like in the story of the Japanese man where like that nature did that, right? This was a human element. And I think you kind of weave that through some of these stories where it was like, this is man-made, this is nature doing something, and this is a belief system that is pulling people in as well. And so you kind of go through all of those elements that we all go through. Just like I talked about, my mind won't take me away, my body, my soul won't let me leave. You know, the war has my soul, my mind, and my body. And it kind of goes through all of these different people that you meet. Tragedy has taken this from me.
Mm. Yeah, I love that you bring up that distinction. It's really interesting, the difference between nature and mankind. And it's something that feels modern in so many ways. One of the stories that I felt was important to tell was about the Achuar, this hunter-gatherer tribe living deep in the Amazon. They used to be headhunters until fairly recently. And then you have to ask yourself, well, have we left nature? Are we not a part of nature? Have we so completely outstripped its forces that we're some new entity? Or are we an extension of that? Because I know that there's a deeper kind of trauma that often results from a disaster that's human caused, rather than if it comes from nature. We take it personally in a certain way. When you look at Mr. Takamatsu, the diver who's looking for his wife, he's not angry at the sea. You know, he says some people can't even look at it anymore. You know, but in fact, you see him diving deeply into the thing, the very thing that took his wife from him, the very thing that caused him his greatest suffering, is now the place where he finds his greatest solace.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about, like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today.
DSW, let us surprise you.
I wouldn't say, and naturally, he's not a man at peace. But I don't know where he would be without that abyss, because it's the only thing capable of holding enough mystery for him to still have communion with the spirit of his wife. What else could do that? What do we have in the human world that's capable of offering that?
You absolutely articulated that the way that I was thinking. If he gives that up, he has given up life itself, I think, in his mind. People talk about like retirement when they know that they're done with something, and it's the moment that it brings you no more joy. And so he has found something in tragedy that has brought him joy, because it is the only thing that it doesn't take his mind off of the tragedy. It actually gets him deeper into the tragedy. So he's never not focused on his wife. He's always focused on that. I would probably think, and I didn't get this takeaway from the documentary, but I would be assured that Pablo thinks the same thing about, you know, what keeps him going, right? And we talked about, you know, I am your person, we are your people, right? That keeps him going on a day to day. I know from experience, knowing that my wife and children were back home and that they were safe and that they needed me back there. That kept me going each and every day. And I think even with a wife that's not there anymore, who has passed away, that he probably thinks the same thing in the tragedy, that I'm going to dive into the waters because that is where she is now. And I want to be close to her. And I don't want to forget her. And I want her to know that I am there as well. And you captured all of that, which I think is very difficult. I don't see that too often in any film that I really watched. And you really captured that and articulated it very well.
Yeah, thank you. I feel very fortunate that these incredible people invited us in. And when I say us too, I also mean my producer, Layla Wolf, who passed away. We were there with Mr. Takamatsu on those dives. It's interesting. He dives into the ocean to feel closer to his wife. After Layla passed away, she was a paraglider. I took up paragliding. I got my license. So I went in the other direction into the sky. But you need to be swallowed up by something, I think.
Yeah.
And so I really relate. You know, I went back in time and I had that experience with Mr. Takamatsu in an entirely different way after she died.
That's exactly what it is. Like, you have to. And I have not had, you know, that experience. You know, my father passed away a few years ago. But we knew it was coming, and nothing you could do at that point. But though that first year of dealing with that was diving into, I guess you can do two things. One is diving into the proper way is diving into, you know, what you loved about your experiences with that person and what that person loved. The other, the much darker human reaction is to go the opposite and just to go down a dark hole of depression, which is not safe for a human to do. And
yeah, I think it was Carl Jung who said, if you're falling, dive.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in over 40 currencies with no markups and no hidden fees. Whether you're sending pesos across the pond, spending reals in Rio, or getting paid in dollars for your side gig, you'll get the mid-market exchange rate on every transaction. Plus, most transfers arrive in less than 20 seconds. Join 15 million customers internationally. Be smart. Get Wise. Download the Wise app today. T's and C's apply.
Yeah. Let it happen, right? It's the philosophers, the ancient philosophers, the more modern Carl Jung, who would just, you know, it's like Marcus Aurelius, who will say, know that you're dead, right? And I've talked to many people. I've dove into some stoicism and thought about, you know, what does death mean and things like that. And what is it? Memento mori, right? Know that you will die. And I had a good friend of mine who's in linguistics, and he was like, you know, I kind of see it differently. I see memento mori differently than just know that you will die. It's really know that you are dead, and the next day is a gift, and the next day is a gift. But every day you die to yourself. If you wake up the next day, that is a blessing. That is treasure, and you should live your life for that. And that really impacted me. And he said that 5 days after my father had passed away. That was really impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's straight from Marcus Aurelius. Die and then begin again, essentially, he says, recommence the living. I think about that a lot. I wonder if in your military career, you feel after leaving the service, there's a kind of death that happens too. When a role is so completely structuring your entire being, and now you have to, you know, find another self. Death does that. Death does that all the time. If you lose someone very close to you that you're intertwined with, you have to grapple with being a new person. I've been thinking about that a lot. And then it brings us back to Pavlo and his roles. I mean, whoever he was before the war, that man is dead.
Yeah.
Right. And you could conceive that he's died many times since the war began. And there's this illusion of continuity that we're always in, that we use to soothe ourselves. You know, we wear these faces so well, it's soothing. But underneath is just chaos of identity and a free fall, essentially, that we're having to deal with. And that's why I think it's so important to understand these roles. When you look at an actor, you know, he was uniquely qualified to understand what he was doing. He had so much practice, Pavlo, taking on roles, putting it on, taking it off. There's a danger that happens when we don't understand that we're playing different roles, that we're different people, when we believe that there should be some kind of consistency to it, when we don't allow ourselves to understand the chaos at the heart of it, we really suffer for it. So, yeah, I would be curious about how you came to terms with that.
I don't know if I have yet. I've gone through dark, very dark moments. You know, the moment that the moment I took the uniform off, and the moment, I think that this is a similar story from any of us, any of my peers, who we'd spent 20 years in war. You know, that's all our generation knew as adults, right? I graduated high school in 2002, 2001, 9/11, 2001. I was a senior in high school. I was already, so the year before, I told a recruiter to never talk to me because I'm never joining the military. By August of 2001, I had already signed and enlisted. September 11th, 2001, the towers come down and we're at war. And, you know, people around me, family, were like, don't do this. Like, this is not you. Don't do it. Some said you're never going to make it. You're not even going to make it through there. And I still went through it. And it wasn't out of some sort of patriotic belief, honestly. It was a moment of like, I need to get my act together, right? I need to get my shit together. I was hoping to be like Pavlo. I was going to go and be an actor. I was going to leave my small town of Louisiana and go to New York and get on stage and do something. And, but I needed a way to fund that, right? And the military offers that. It offers a way to fund that. Well, 2 years into being in uniform, there I am, you know, in Iraq, participating in a very controversial conflict, right? This wasn't Afghanistan. Afghanistan was known at that time as the Forgotten War. Because the job in the sense had already been done. We were just waiting to get bin Laden to finish everything. Iraq was completely different. You know, there people didn't understand why we were there. And people were passionate about whether we should be there or not. And still to this day, and some who were passionate that we should be there are now on the other end of that, where they, especially my brothers and sisters in arms, are saying we wasted 20 years of our lives for nothing. But when the uniform comes off, that is a depressing moment because you have no, your life means nothing now. You spent all of this time doing one thing and now you're just, you're nothing basically. And that's why a lot of people have trouble getting into like corporate life and or just becoming a human being again once the uniform comes off, because it's like, what are we doing this for? Like, this can't be for Zoom meetings and emails and, you know, agile tech things, right? This, there's something more to this life. And so you kind of lose that. But what I always say is, I think it was Churchill. Churchill said that if you're going through hell, keep going. But what I always tell people is Churchill missed the mark on that one, because what he didn't tell you was that you need someone to pull you out. So if you're going through hell, reach for the hand of the person pulling you out. And a lot of people push that hand away. I had a hand. I had my wife who was behind me for everything, and she pulled me out of the darkest of days. And so I can say I'm still alive because of her.
Yeah, I really feel that.
I think Pavlo has the kind of this same, he's got a very strong wife. And
yeah, she's the counterpoint, right? I mean, it's, life is so much about balance. And she's remembering for him, I think, and remembering his identity.
Yes.
It's that she holds it for him. And then she's doing this incredible psychic work, which really struck me, where she's imagining him safe. She imagines him encapsulated in this egg of light, which is her protective power. And when you go to places like Ukraine, when you go to places like you've been, Iraq, Afghanistan, I think you begin to really take those kind of things seriously, you know, that there's something happening on another level that you can't quite understand. Pavlo and Katya, they talk with a sense of destiny. The way that you describe your story, you sign up in August of 2001. I mean, I can't imagine feeling any other way about it, except that you were on a trajectory in life. Like you had a guiding hand. You talk about the hand that pulls you out, but there's the hand that also pushes you in. So, and I feel like if you're in harmony with life, that happens all the time. It happens continually. Like there's never a point when there's not a hand there. It's just you don't see it. When there's not some force that's moving you or offering you a way through. The tough thing is when we can't feel it, we can't see it, and we feel
yes,
completely alone or abandoned. And this is also running through like our whole world full of spiritual traditions. It's like this... this loss and rediscovery and what faith really means. And yeah, but
and isn't that what religion is, right? What, that there's faith, that there is someone else, no matter how alone you are, someone else, something else is there to wrap their arms around you, to guide you out. So if you don't have a wife like Pavlo, like myself, to pull you out of things, it is human nature to search for that thing. And we found it in hundreds of different, maybe thousands of religions. You brought that out in like with the, and I won't, just don't remember everybody's names or anything like that, but like the Amazon tribe, just like that was their experience.
Yeah. And you find it wherever you can. Is the other thing. What I love is with all of these stories, you're experiencing people having mystical experiences themselves. And what religion is, what the religion I grew up in was hearing about other people's mystical experiences. Okay.
It's over there. It's 2,000 years in the past. It's somewhere inaccessible. And what you find is a world full of people that are guided now, that are having these intense experiences now. You could almost create a religion. You could imagine so many of these figures 1,000 years from now. You could build a religion around any of them. You could have, you know, the stories sort of atrophy into that, or, you know, configure into that and then sort of solidify. I think that's why I keep going back. And I think that's also why I keep going to these intense kind of places. Like, you wanted to be informed too, is, you know, what you said. You needed that. You have to walk into the forge. You have to go into the places where all the noise, you know, is banished, and then you're left with it in that place, in that special kind of silence and emptiness and void, something can arise.
And I think it's a need to feel something, right? There does become a moment. I'd be interested if Pavlo talked about this at all, but there's a moment where you're desensitized to everything. You know, in my time, there's like human beings exploding. There are, you know, I was in Iraq for the first elections, and I was there at the Kark IP, Iraqi police station, and we were security for the elections in that, which is that area of operation. And you just witnessed, right? There was a person strapped with a bomb that exploded themselves in the line for the election. And so you're seeing that, right? There's body parts and things like that. And then you're seeing people move and get back into line to vote because they believe in something. And so that desensitizes you to a few things. You know, you can now watch videos of people exploding and going, I can just take my mind out of that. And so each time you need to, I think each time I went back, I needed to feel something even more. I needed to go to a higher extreme, you know, support special operations because it's more extreme, and do 18 hours a day for 180 days without stopping, because the moment you stop, the moment I stopped was the moment I ended. And so I couldn't anymore. And I had to stop thinking in that way and had good people pull me out, like I said, and realize there are, you can feel emotions that are happy. There was a time when I didn't think happiness was an emotion, right? There's joy, but is happiness really an emotion? And you need people to tell you that, yes, to be happy is a good emotion. To be angry, to be sad, those are emotions as well, but they're good emotions. And so I had to learn that through my journey.
I have the sense personally that one of the things you lose is the purity of emotions, that there's always a mixture now. There's not, like, when you're a child, you feel just pure joy, or you feel pure devastation, pure whatever it is, but it just comes through with this, you know, excluding all else. And now I feel like it's all mixed in together in a way that you can no longer tease apart.
And you capture I'm saying all of this because you've captured these elements, and these are emotions that happen to me as I'm watching the film. And so going into it, and I'm really grateful that you allowed me to screen it and watch it before it came out. We're filming this February 20th. It's out today, correct?
Today.
Yeah. And I would say, everyone, please watch it. It was something that resonated with me, not just from this level of like, oh, well, it's another, you know, this is another soldier who is fighting in a war. But this is, you know, there's a story of a man who lost something, a family who lost something. These are all elements that everyone, that's the human condition we all deal. We are all going to deal with all of these emotions. And through it all, one thing that caught me, I don't know if documentaries have spoiler alerts, but spoiler alert. The one thing that really caught me, because the whole time I'm thinking about bringing a child into to this world. And like, I was not a dad when I went on my first deployment, but I became a father through subsequent deployments and seeing. And I don't remember ever having a moment where I questioned doing that back in 2006 and 2008. And I wonder if Pablo, if they thought in the moment, right? In the moment of passion, we're going to bring a life into this world and we don't know what the world is going to be for that person. But I'm going to try to make it better for them.
That's an extraordinary responsibility to take on and an act of absurd optimism. I mean, yeah. It's absurdist, honestly, to think. And I say that without any judgment at all. But yeah, I really appreciate what you said about the film and the fact that you took it on. The fact that you, because it's a challenging film, I can say that, I think. It asks a lot of the audience. It's not for everyone. You have to be equal to it, and you have to trust, you know, that you're being taken somewhere. And so it means all the more to me because of that and because of your history. You know, in a way, you earned your way into so much hard knowledge, so much hard wisdom, you know. And I think everyone will see a different film because of that. You know, no one's going to see it the same way that you have. It works in that way.
I think that's the beauty of the art. That's when you know you have something good. And a lot of times I think you'll hear people who will make fun of these kind of things where someone reads a book, a classic book of literature, and they have this huge takeaway. And whether it's a professor or a friend will say, you missed the mark on all of this. Like, that's not what the author was trying to get at. But for that person, that was their lived experience, and that's what they felt the author was getting at. And that is true art, is that, like, it's not, the artist might disagree with me on this one, but it's not so much about what the artist is trying to portray. It's about what the audience gets from it through their own lived experience. Because there's 9 billion people, almost 9 million people in the world. We are not all the same. We don't have all the same experiences. We are not, you're absolutely right. We're not going to see it in the same way. My kids will see the film in a different way than I saw it, from a different perspective, right? They will have the perspective of the families who are having to go through this, not so much the person entrenched in warfare. And great art does that. I think bad art, and we see this a lot in movies, I think, today. Bad art is pushing something right in your face and slapping you across the face with it so that you cannot make up your mind about what's trying to be portrayed there.
Right, right. And I can't participate in that. I can't. I feel like for it to be art, it has to be beyond you in a way. Like, you end up making something from the creator side, you end up making something greater than yourself. From the viewer side of things, you end up seeing beyond yourself. It's not something that you can contain within an idea. It's something ineffable. And you're going to have an intimate experience with these people all your own. It's not even my business anymore now that the film is made, you know? It's I can't even mediate that at all. I was able to provide a channel, and then it lives on its own from that point on.
Yeah, and very well done. There's this moment in there that really struck me. I will say two moments, because we started talking about one at the very beginning that I'd like to dig deeper into for a little bit. But the first one that's at the top of my mind is the story of Pavlo's dream, where he's in a room with Putin. Like, this is the enemy, you know? And I think about myself thinking at a young age of being in a room with bin Laden, right? And what would you do? And he's got this dream about Putin, and they're sitting at the table together, and he leaves, and he comes back, and Putin's in his seat. Mm. And he's like, what he thought his reaction would be is, screw you. Like, that's where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to have the best view. But he sort of had this compassion moment of like, we are both humans. We are both men. And we see things from different perspectives. And the majority of people would say one perspective is correct and the other is brutal authoritarianism. But we're all still just human.
Mm. Yeah, that perspective taking, I think, is really unique to your MOS as well. When you deal in intelligence, right? And it's what you said before as well. Like, it's looking through the sniper scope. It's taking that photograph. Like, you understand your enemy to a degree that the soldiers on the ground, infantrymen, they're not going to understand. You're privy to their inner thoughts. You're listening to intercepted phone calls. If you're watching via drone surveillance, you're seeing them with their families, with their wives, or taking a moment to themselves. Moments that they don't expect. When they think they're alone, you know, you're the only one there with them. And so this idea of separateness collapses, and yet there's still this very strong concept of enemy, right? I mean, what would you have done in the room with bin Laden?
I've thought about it early on, and it was never shoot, you know, take and capture or shoot. It is sit down and have a conversation. Because I think if we can talk, we can put ideology aside and understand, like, we're just two people and we disagree with each other, but that doesn't mean we need to be doing this, like what we are doing. And you said those things, but, you know, just as I would suspect a war correspondent to have said, to have explained drone footage and intelligence in the exact way that it happens. You are what we call pattern of life. You are watching someone's life. And then the decision is made. And from that perspective, you're not making the decision, or I was not making the decision, but I was a conduit to that decision to end someone's life after I'd watched them kiss their wife goodbye. Or, you know, there's a moment where you watch one of their kids fall off of a railing playing around, and they come up and they hug their daughter and they bring them in the house, and where they were going to leave and go do something and you know, put an IED together with their group, they actually stayed back and they took care of their daughter. It's a very humanizing moment. And then 2 days later, the decision is made that they should be no more. And I'm not saying this in the way that it's like, oh, that shouldn't happen, because they weren't doing something evil. They weren't getting ready to. And I'm sure Pavlo has these same thoughts of like, when I have to end another Russian's life, I have to do that. I don't want to. I think there's a difference there. And I don't think a lot of, I know in my mind, I could not grasp the difference between I needed to do that, but I didn't want to. And so there were a few years in that where it was like, I am an evil person. I don't care about it, right? Because I have to do these things. But I had to make that distinction of this was a need, because I knew what I knew. And I wonder if Pavlo thinks the same, feels the same. I know what I know. I'm doing this for a good reason, but I don't want to do that. Mm. I have to.
Yeah. You can understand why Oppenheimer was so fixated on the Bhagavad Gita, you know? This, you were an instrument of fate. And it's so funny to me that you wanted to be an actor and you had this idea you're going to go to New York, and you ended up taking on just a role that would have beyond anything that you could have done on Broadway. It's not, you didn't have the audience there, but you were living it in a way that you got what you asked for. You know, be careful what you ask for,
man. Yeah.
You got that. And so I can understand why you would be able to comprehend Pavlo's inner world to this degree, and his roles, as we're moving in and out of them all the time. We're doing roles right now. You know, we're in our roles right now.
Then, it was Shakespeare, right? All the world's a stage.
Yeah. And something else, then something else, then something else, and it never ends, is the other thing, until it's, you know. But then you can say it continues on in another form, because you can deconstruct identity to that point that, you know. But that's going a whole other place.
Well, I always like to, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I'm sure you've got plenty of other interviews, but something I've done recently, so I've stopped doing these interview portions of the podcast, but I started doing them again, and so enjoyable, but I've started to end where we begin, and so that's where I want to kind of end here, because we began... before even recording, I was talking about the story with Pavlo's wife, and she said something similar to what my wife would say. You know, it's like the Hangover 2. It's Bangkok has him now. War has him now, and he can never give that up. And he can't give it up until it's over, which was just, I didn't think about it until she said it, right? And it became a very emotional moment for me. It's like once it's there and you're doing it, and we spent 20 years and Pablo's at 4 years now. 4 years is a lifetime at war. I don't think we understand that in this day and age. And she's got a child, their child. And she says, you know, he's never going to give it up. War has him. And that just became a, that's how I think the documentary sort of wraps up. And I thought it was a great moment to do that, to show not just what it does to the person in conflict. And I always say this, like, for me, being deployed wasn't that terrifying for me, because I knew my skill set and I knew where I was and what I could do. But it was extremely terrifying for the people I left behind, because they had no idea. And they always said, you know, war has him. And it's not going to let go of him.
Yeah. I love that you bring it back to before the recording began, because one of the things that I enjoy most in life is a second chance. And then how rarely do we get that, you know? But that's a beautiful thing. There's a moment, we didn't capture it, so let's go back and we'll find another moment there. We won't find the thing that was that happened before that was lost. We'll find something new. But this idea of Pablo being a hostage, I think she said a hostage, a prisoner.
That's it. Yes.
Hostage of this war, a prisoner. Also means being a prisoner of, it means being a prisoner of the role of a certain identity. And earlier in the film, she says, I believe that God was preparing him for this role. And he said himself, you get the role that you need, the role that you're ready for. And I was ready to let the war in at this time, right? So that was part of what he sees as his spiritual journey. And so then in that case, he's being taught, and we all get taught in our own way, the lesson of surrender, right? And you see it, like you were talking about being in the war, you leave it, you want to go back to it, but when you're there, you want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You dream about what it's going to be like when you're home, how beautiful. But then you get there, and you're in traffic, and suddenly this rage comes up in you, and you don't even know why, you know, but it's completely devoid of meaning. And then you long for that again. And really, we're always torn in that way. And maybe it's in the transitions, maybe it's in the movement between one state to the next, you know, where we really find ourselves before, like, as you say, you're in it for too long and then you stop feeling, right? That's what the idea of the role offers us, though, is that understanding of translating into something else, transubstantiating, however you want to phrase it. And I think the war will continue to move through him the same way it moves through you, the way it moves through me, until it's done with us.
That's a powerful statement I don't think I've thought about before, right? Like, when is it going to end, you know? And not just the war, like the war in Ukraine. It is going to end at some point. We just don't know when. And a new war will start up, and that one will end. But when will the war end in me, in you, in Pablo, and in anyone else who's experienced great tragedy? It won't, right? 20 years from now, hopefully still around doing things, it will still be there. It's still a part of you, but don't let it consume you. You talked about a lot of great things of you're no longer the same person. After a loved one passes away, you're not the same person, right? When a rock hits the water, the next rock that hits it does not hit the same river because it's changed. Something has changed it. We're always changing. So it's not, don't let it change you. You will be changed. Just make sure that you're letting it change you for the right reasons. And when it's not, find that hand to pull you back and say, you know, this is not who you want to be. And so I feel like, or is this your podcast? Because I feel like you've helped me. I actually feel like this is therapy. You've helped me in a lot of ways. And so I want to say thank you for that. And thank you for the film, because it did impact me so much. And so I do hope everyone can see it. And so I want to give you a few moments to let everybody know where they can see it. And what else you might be working on, but really, where can you find the film? Where can you watch it as we come up on 4 years of brutal peer-to-peer war that we've seen in Ukraine.
Thank you for that. That means so much on a personal level. And it helps me too. It helps me too to talk about it. I think there's something incredible about the fact that you can't help someone else without helping yourself, really. And our destinies are linked in that way. Even if we just cross paths here and this is the one time in our lives that, you know, it's in the moment, it's all there is. And so, yeah, I really appreciate you for being in it with me. I'm really fully committing to that. And as far as the film is concerned, I know it comes out on Amazon Prime today. There's a variety of other platforms in America, North America, in different countries around the world. The distribution company knows more about that.
We'll have them get it to me so we can put it in the show notes so everyone can see. But what I'm kind of getting this feeling from you is like, that's not what's important. It's, you know, the conversations that people have around it that are important. And you would probably agree being able to help one person in all of this, and you have helped me, so you've helped one person. That's probably the true achievement of all of that.
Yeah, I'm going to take a moment to take that in, you know. That's all we have, really. It's almost like the film is besides the point. Beside the point in the sense that you live your life, you have experiences, and for me, the film is what remains. It's behind me. You know, it's like I can tell you where to see it and all of this sort of thing. But I like the fact that it can, even in this conversation, like take on a new life. So thank you for making that possible.
Thank you so much. Thank you for agreeing to do this. And once again, allowing me to watch this. Very, very powerful. And I just want you to know that everything I say about it is, this is not where I thought the podcast was going to go. In writing out, we'll ask this question and this question, and it went on a totally different. That's what I love about doing these kind of things. And very rarely does it happen, but very rarely does something impact me so much. So thank you.
Thank you. It's really been an honor.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in over 40 currencies with no markups and no hidden fees. Whether you're sending pesos across the pond, spending reals in Rio, or getting paid in dollars for your side gig, you'll get the mid-market exchange rate on every transaction. Plus, most transfers arrive in less than 20 seconds. Join 15 million customers internationally. Be smart. Get Wise. Download the Wise app today. T's and C's apply.